The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
And hey, welcome to the College Football Podcast with Kirk Herbstreit, David Pollock, Kevin Nagandi. We are taping this on Monday, August 31st. I'm not sure what happened in the summer. It's been a blur. And to think that September begins tomorrow and that we saw college football over the weekend and we have college football coming your way this upcoming week is fantastic. And it's great to have Herbstreit with us as well as Pollock, as we're going to try and do every Monday or Tuesday here on the podcast in front of us now that football games are going to be underway. And want to make sure you guys know also we'll have previews of the conferences that are playing in the coming weeks as well and go from there. I'm just telling you, with bated breath, it's been trying for, I think, anybody that loves the sport, that follows the sport, on whether we're going to have a season or not. And it, you want to be cautiously optimistic as I am. And I'm going to hold that same attitude, especially starting this podcast with Herbstreit and Pollock, because it's important that this belief that we're going to have the season. And that's a good thing, considering that it's been an up and down roller coaster of, well, are we going to have it? Are we not? We're going to have it. We don't know. And then seeing two power conferences say no, and then three still standing. And we'll see if hopefully they're still standing as the fall continues. So with that, we hope you enjoy the podcast, and we hope that we continue to talk football in the coming weeks. All right, guys, I haven't been this excited in months. It is August 31st, and it's great to have Kirk Herbstreit and David Pollock here with us together on the College Football Podcast. There is so much to cover. Herbie, though, first off, congratulations on the Emmy, well-deserved, on sports personality. We're clapping right now. If you could see us, we're giving you a standing O. And it's
no,
great
we're not.
To have you
I'm
with
not.
Us. But once again, you know, that hard work always pays off, and it's great to have you with us. And I hope everybody on your side in with the family is safe and healthy right now.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it. Everybody's good. Like you guys just said, it's August 31. We didn't know how we'd get here, who'd be playing, but we've got some teams still standing, and I'm just great to hear your guys' voices and talk football, man. Everything good with you guys?
Hey, don't skirt around it and start not talking about your award, bro. You just totally dodged the question there. But no, here's what I'll say. After working with Kirk for so many years, nobody loves the game of college football more. Like, he loves the game of college football. He eats, sleeps, breathes it. He has helped so many people in this business. You can make a list of it, me being one. I mean, I got a call from Kirk like 9-10 years ago. He was watching some SEC Gridiron Live. I don't know why he was watching the show. I have no clue why. Population 4 watching the show. And I get a voicemail from Kirk after the show. It's like, hey, dude, I like your passion, your energy. And then ends up, you know, helping me come to ESPN. So there's a million people that could say that, but nobody loves the game more than that dude right there. So well,
I appreciate it, brother. I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
And Herbie, let's just enjoy Pollock being complimentary right now on Mondays. This is probably the peak for Pollock being nice to us moving forward.
No,
so
no.
We look forward to having you guys with us on Mondays here while we tape the podcast. And we talked about football, guys. We had high school football. Over the weekend, we had Central Arkansas rallying to win the season opener. Let me tell you, Central Arkansas will be on everybody's mind this season. They are not afraid to play anybody, anywhere. I'm all in on this squad. So it's good to see that we have some action as we get ready for more football later on this week. Herbie, how would you sum up the chaos? And it's obviously a very general question, but the chaos of this summer and the idea of three power conferences still playing with the hope of playing at least in the coming weeks, and the uncertainty where the Power Fives are going back and forth. We thought they were in line at one point. They weren't in line. And then the Big Ten now potentially hearing rumors of reconsidering, the Pac-12 saying we're done with all our sports the entire calendar year. Have you seen anything like this before?
No, I don't think this is unprecedented. I don't think anybody's seen anything like this, at least in our lifetimes. When you go through uncharted waters, you know, it's not like you have a playbook for that. So I think it's very easy to sit on the sideline and criticize leaders that have to make decisions. In this case, in college football, I think if anybody questioned, you know, where the leadership is in college football, is it the NCAA? Is it Bill Hancock? Is it each of the Power Five conferences? I think we learned that everybody lives in a silo. You know, everybody kind of looks after their chancellor, their presidents, their coaches, their ADs, their players, their constituents, their fans, and everybody looks after their backyard. And it's frustrating. And I'm hoping on the back end of this, you know, when you go through adversity, David, I'd like to think it hurts to go through it, but I'd like to think you can come out on the other side and be better. And I'm hoping that, I don't know what the answer is, but I'm hoping the powers to be realize that this is not probably the best way to go in the future. We need a voice. We need a person that we turn to who gathers information and then says, okay, here's what I think we need to do collectively for the sport. I don't even know if that's possible, but it sounds good to me because this has been very frustrating to see the Big Ten do what they're doing, Larry out west doing what he's doing, Greg holding steady in the SEC. It's like everybody's their own boss, you know, and I think it leaves the average college football fan kind of confused and frustrated with the whole process.
And I think it makes it where, you know, listen, you talked about adversity. That brings about change most of the time. And what we need to see change. Kirk, there's no way in Hades, by the way, we're going to have one voice for college football. That's not the way we do things. Look at the college football playoff committee. We're going to have a committee because God forbid we leave anybody out. We got to make sure the West is covered, the East is covered, the North is covered, the South. We got to make sure we got every voice in there. And there's nothing to complain about. There's voices for each side. And we'll put together a committee, by the way. And we'll realize after all this stuff, this is stupid that we do not have one unified front in college football, that we don't have one scheduling going forward, that we do it together. Like if the Pac-12 is going to play, the Big Ten is going to play, that's like we should all be communicating all information in a pandemic where it seems like we should be putting, obviously, player safety first. Well, obviously, we need to be able to share information. It needs to be readily available for everybody all the time. So we make decisions. And so people don't look, you know, like right now, you can call it what you want to call it. Some people are going to think the Big Ten and the Pac-12 look foolish. Well, if we were united and we did this together and we had a committee, nobody would be able to say that. And whether they're foolish or not, in your opinion, you have the right to, you know, to diagnose that yourself. Like, I think they should have waited. And waited a little bit more time because things are ever changing. But, you know, this is definitely something that will be addressed. And you know what else it proves, Kirk? The NCAA does jack squat.
Right.
I mean,
right.
My goodness. They don't decide whether we play. They don't decide scheduling. The only thing they do is dumb transfer rules that we whine at every year because it's done not done equally and not done for the players most of the time. So I think we find out a lot about ourselves and the way we run college football moving forward. And I don't think they'll ever look the same.
Well, that gets back to, you know, the Big Ten here and making the decision and the timing of their decision, as well as the Pac-12. But now the brushback that we saw, the double downing.
You know, the Big Ten, by the way. And then, you know, the Pac-12, too. I mean, they're there, too. Like,
no, I said that. No, and I mentioned that. But the one thing you've seen from the Pac-12 is, at least publicly you've seen, is a unified front, right, from the president and from everybody associated. Now, granted, it's segmented, like Kirk brought up, with, you know, regions and hot spots, especially when you look at four schools in California and the entire state of California, what they're dealing with. So it is a segmented thing, this conversation. And that's what I think is interesting and why we love college football. It's such a segmented conversation and you have different points of view. But when we come back to the Big Ten, where the Big Ten doubled down on the idea of saying, hey, we have reached this decision. We hear the brushback from everybody. Even from some presidents within our own group and ADs, but we are still sticking to this. And then the reports late last week, they're considering coming back to play maybe sometime before the end of this year. Herbie, let's start with you on this concept that the Big Ten is entertaining the idea of maybe playing later on in the fall.
Yeah, I obviously heard the same stuff. Because I haven't really spoken about any of this with David or with you. let's go back even a little bit further back when Kevin Warren, who's newly appointed as a commissioner, you know, Jim Delaney was there for almost, what was it, 40 years, I want to say. I mean, he was there for a long, long time and was looked at as one of the true leaders in college athletics, steps down right around the Rose Bowl this past January. And Kevin Warren comes in from the NFL and the Vikings and basically 2 months later inherits this mess. And I don't know Kevin at all. I've just been watching and paying attention to what he's been handed here and what he's trying to do. I think it's very obvious that whether they made the right or wrong decision, the messaging was a fumble. You know, that they did not handle that well. They, I think, came out on the back end of a week or two later and admitted that in some couple articles that I read. I found it interesting that Larry Scott, I talked with a few head coaches off the record who said, you know, we went in there ready to swing. We want to play. And then when they got done with their presentation with their doctors, they all kind of looked around each other as coaches and were like, guess we're not playing. Like there was no, well, this isn't right. The players need to play. It was just like, what are you going to do? You can't argue with science. It is what it is. Hopefully we can play later. I mean, that was kind of a unified front from the Pac-12 coaches. And as you guys said, David and Kevin, really haven't heard any complaining or arguing out west. The Big Ten, on the other hand, I've never seen a power conference like the Big Ten publicly question the leadership and the decision. I mean, they're on social media. They're on the Good Morning America. Players, coaches, ADs, and the Blue Bloods. I'm not talking just like Maryland upset. I'm talking Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Wisconsin. I mean, they want answers, and they want to have a chance to play. Yeah.
They're new to the Big Ten, Rutgers and Maryland.
So I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't think anybody does. We've heard this latest that they might play in Thanksgiving.
Stupid, by the way.
Why not play right now if you're going to play at Thanksgiving? I don't know what they're thinking.
That part probably enraged me more than anything is when you hear that, because all that means is, you know what? We don't want to admit we jumped the gun You know what? Here's what's going to be awesome. Listen, I love playing for trophies. There's nothing like it, bro. I love the end of the season with rivals and all that stuff. But you're telling me you're going to put some games together where we're playing for possibly, you know, these trophies that the Big Ten plays for. Yeah. And wait a minute. But we got the big deal going on over here. And here's the thing. If I'm in the Pac-12, if I'm in the Big Ten, Kirk, if you hurt your arm, Kevin, you hurt your arm, you go to a doctor. One doctor might tell you one thing. You go to another doctor, he might tell you need surgery. Like, that's the way we all have that in our walks of life. So let's make sure we stay a little patient next time. And I think they will. But the Big Ten, I love the way the players and the coaches, they were like, why are we not doing this? Like, why can we not give
David,
this
a try? Let me ask you something. Wouldn't this simplify it? I just thought, because people got up in arms when they heard, this is months ago, that Ohio State was having some of their players sign a, what was it? Like a some kind of form
a waiver,
understanding the risk of what's at stake here. Why not say, okay, everybody in the Big Ten, coaches included, that wants to participate and understands the potential risk, you and your family, all of you over here in this line, and you sign this, takes away any liability for the conference. You understand that you looked at the data. You understand that most of these kids at your age are, you know, asymptomatic, lose sense of smell, lose a sense of taste. But there are some outliers. You need to know that risk. If you're okay with that, you sign this. And if we have enough that want to play on all the teams and want to coach on all the teams, we'll go play. And all the people over here, Rondale Moore, Rashad Bateman, Micah Parsons, the guys that don't want to play, aren't comfortable, no problem. You go over here, you either wait till next year to play college, or if you want to go to the NFL, you go to the NFL. But if we have enough left that have signed that, hey, I understand the waiver, my parents understand, we want to play. Because you're hearing a lot of that hashtag, we want to play. Why wouldn't you just green light it and go ahead and play if the players are willing to take the potential risk? Why wouldn't you do that?
I'm with you.
Kevin, I thought for sure you were going to jump in there because you're always the guy that jumps in there and has a comment about that.
So I'm Kirk too.
I'm curious because you're signing something, right?
You're signing something.
But Kevin's always telling me on here on the podcast that but it's not about the players. It's about everybody else that it will affect, and the older people and the spread of the virus. And the,
you're like, right.
That's what you tell me.
And Pollock, you're right. But these are two separate topics. This is the commitment from the players signing. And it comes down to one thing, one word, liability. Right. And if the parents
and the family members are
OK with the liability, then that's the difference that separates it. I think that when you talk about the concept of, hey, you're taking a risk and it's okay to take a risk. I've always said this, if you compare it to, you know, like David, you love bringing up the safety belt. You're taking the safety belt as your personal risk. My whole concern for many of these young men and women that take part in any athletics is it's not so much what's going to happen to them. It's if they go back home to their communities. And here's the one thing I did not understand is if the Big Ten makes this decision to come back, two separate things. Why are you going to let the young men go back home and then bring them back after they've been in their own mini bubble? And remember, a few months ago, people were like, there's no way you could have football if you have only online learning. What are we seeing? We're seeing major universities have all online learning and the football's still going on, right? You have a mini bubble of these campuses where they have, you know, the football facility. It is their own mini bubble, and you're protecting them right then and there. And
but aren't we seeing classes being classes in person in places too, though, that doesn't have football?
Yeah, we are. We're seeing outbreaks.
So it's okay for students to go back to school, but it's not okay. That to me doesn't make sense. Those dots don't connect. What am I missing where it's okay to go sit in class and go conjugate with your friends and socialize, which you're going to do, by the way, no matter what anybody says. But why can't you play football where you're tested? And you know when you line up, you're not going to line up across somebody that has corona. I mean, you're going to test them daily, weekly, several times a week. I mean, there's a disconnect there. It's safe enough to go to school, but it's not safe enough to play football. That doesn't make sense to me.
I'm with you. But also, there's a lot of financial implications here. Some schools don't want to do it because they don't want to lose money because of the testing it's going to cost them, right? And they have to do multiple testing a week. And this concept of, hey, how much money are we going to make here? We're not going to make anything because we can't have fans come to these games. We can't profit on concessions or parking or tailgating or anything like that. So what are we doing? This is going to be a lose-lose for us profit-wise. There's a lot of layers to all of this that I think that sometimes are disguised. Hey, we're looking for the safety of our players. And in reality, some people just don't want to talk about the liability, the long-term liability and the effects of, hey, this could be a heart issue. We don't know because it's still a novel virus. We're still trying to understand. I come back to one thing with the Big Ten. If you're going to come back and play football, why this concept of Thanksgiving when you have to think about the holiday season, right? Wasn't the concept of let's try to get the season in and maybe before the holiday season, before people have to go home, right? And this concept of playing football separately from everybody else, and you don't get the chance to be in the conversation of maybe like an Ohio State or a Penn State, the way they're built, that you could be in the playoff if you're still going to play these games, conference games. Why don't they start the first week of October? Get everybody back the first week of September, 3 weeks of practice, see what happens. You start the week after the SEC. You could still potentially get enough games in where you could be in the conversation for the playoff. I just don't understand that if you're coming back at Thanksgiving, why can't you come back at potentially early October?
That would require you admitting you were wrong.
True.
Listen,
do we know fact that Thanksgiving is even on the table? I know there are reports about
that. No. And Herbie, that's a great point. These are just conversations that are being discussed. So, you know, a variety of college football reporters have said that it was discussed last week. We heard early October was something on the table. Adam Rittenberg had said like Thanksgiving was potentially on the table. But again, nothing set in stone. It feels like everything's just put out there on the wall to see what sticks, see what generates momentum, and then go from there. I just don't think this seesawing is fair to anybody involved, especially bottom line, the players and the coaches.
Yeah. These players, I've been amazed that I talked to Ryan Day a little bit about this last week. I've just been incredibly amazed that you've not seen more Big Ten players choosing to, you know, use the transfer portal and play or opt out like Justin Fields. I think everybody's just kind of waiting, you know, guys like Justin Fields, why aren't they going to play somewhere else? Why aren't they, you know, getting ready for the league? And, you know, they Ohio State, as an example, has been very proactive with the cards they've been dealt as of now on how they're going to use the month of September, how they're going to use the month of October. That's with an assumption that they won't start till January. So, I mean, there's just so many unknowns. They're just so these poor coaches trying to keep their players. Like David said, you know, if the ACC, the Big 12 and the SEC go forward and we start having game day and we're doing this podcast and we're breaking down, hey, how about that Florida game last week against A&M? And what about Alabama and Georgia next week? We just do what we do. And you're in the Big 10 and you're in the Pac 12 and you're sitting there saying, remember, guys, we're starting in early January. It's like, how do you keep them interested? How do you keep them excited throughout those months of September and October and November when every time they turn on the TV, they're watching some kind of hyped up game that they wish they were a part of?
And how do you keep them not depressed? How do you keep them out of trouble?
I mean,
there's a lot of things. And by the way, let's talk about recruiting. Let's talk about your program having zero exposure. Nothing going on with your program. All it does is further divide like the teams that are playing between the teams that aren't. And I mean, it just, you know, you're getting recruited and you're like, oh yeah, I'm watching them this weekend. I'm going to visit Georgia this weekend. I'm going to visit Alabama this week. I'm going to visit LSU. I'm going to visit Clemson. I'm going to visit Oklahoma. I'm going to visit Texas, and just crickets everywhere else in the country, you know? Yeah. So I think it would have a lasting effect too on recruiting and kids coming out. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I would, Kirk, you would be too. I would be so pissed off if I was one of those players. Oh my God. Ohio State to me has the biggest gripe. Ohio State, their roster doesn't take a backseat to anybody.
Nope.
It never does. I mean, it's always the team every time up north that, I didn't mean that, pun intended. It's the team in the Big Ten every year that you look at that, has the players that can match up with anybody, and they're sitting there going, this stinks.
David, but think about how they lost last year when they walked off that field against Clemson and Phoenix, right? And they had a chip on their shoulder this entire offseason. They were amped up, fired up, ready to roll. Even though they lost some great players like Chase Young, they had Ryan Day told me the way they were practicing, he said he's never seen a group of true freshman receivers in his entire career like this group to go along with some veterans that they already have on the roster. He goes, this offense and this skill is as good as I've been around in my coaching career. And that was when I was in the NFL or what we've had here at Ohio State. I was so pumped to see this offense and what it could do. And to have that chip on their shoulder, which you're always looking to try to create in college with the high profile teams. And they had it. And it would have been a heck of an opportunity for them to kind of see if they could get back into a position to win the Big Ten, get into the playoff, and see if they could throw their hat in the ring and see what they could do. And that now, like you said, to have that taken away from them, there's a lot of animosity on that roster, that's for sure.
Now, David will tell you, I had Ohio State as the number one team in the country coming in because that game against Clemson was one of the most physical games you will ever see. And Justin Fields had that offense.
I left there thinking Ohio State was the better team.
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Ohio State LSU.
No doubt.
Imagine that matchup. I mean, that would have been a great one. But
it would have been a great one. But LSU still would.
LSU.
And nobody touching them. That's why it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. But I definitely looked at that game with Dobbins getting hurt, and you got targeting. There's a lot of things
The T. Higgins fumble is the one that just you scratch your head on. And that was a difference in the game. That was a scoop and score for a touchdown. But they were also in the red zone like four or five times and came away, with field goals. So
anyway, that was last year.
Let's talk a little bit about you mentioned briefly the transferring. We're seeing it. I mean, the Schooler brothers, Brendan Schooler, who's a grad transfer from Arizona who didn't play there because he's transferring from Oregon, has decided to go to Texas. His brother has decided to go to Texas Tech. And this is a huge concern. This is for guys in the Big Ten, like you brought up, the coaches making sure players in the Pac-12, coaches making sure that they're not losing talent from their teams because the kids want to play right now, or they're trying to find a way to do something and be active at the same time. They're going to get poached, and that's the reality. And then that bleeds into the other big story is Ja'Marr Chase. Reports are that Ja'Marr Chase has decided he's not going to play this year for LSU. I come back to, well, if you watch anything of Ja'Marr Chase in the last month and a half of this season, he doesn't need to play again. And Kenneth Gainwell of Memphis deciding to potentially opt out in 2020. How do you think that's going to affect long-term seeing, not seeing the Micah, well, we wouldn't see Micah Parsons, but guys that decided to opt out, how do you think that's going to affect these teams that are still playing?
Hey, Kirk, you take this question in 1 second, but you know what this tells me about Ja'Marr Chase opting out right now? Mm. Tell me you're on the same page, Kirk. Mm-hmm. It has. I'm just telling you, their offense ain't gonna be real good. That's a fact, bro. I'm just telling you. You don't go through all this stuff and be at this point and now go, I'm opting out, unless you're going, man, where is Joe Brady? Man, where is Joe Burrow? I guarantee that, bro. He is literally like, oh my goodness, this is not what I want. Like, so I think that says something about LSU. Kirk, you can handle all the other stuff with all the transfers, though.
Well, how about Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Joe Brady, Joe Burrow? Just a loaded group last year, and he was the man standing back after just playing the 2 years. And as you said, probably as gifted as any of these guys. So you can understand that he feels like, you know, with COVID out there, why take that risk? And like you said, maybe he's looking around at practice going, man, it ain't going to be like last year. Maybe there's something to that. I think there's the set of circumstances right now. There's Micah Parsons, there's Rondale Moore, there's Ja'Marr Chase. There's a lot of high profile guys that are saying, hey, you know what, why risk it? I want to get ready for the NFL. And in this case, with that out there, I mean, who are we to blame them with that potential risk? I read somewhere, I think it was Ryan Clark or Booger, were saying, you know, hey, is this going to create a new trend moving forward once we're on the back end of this COVID and players are back to having a normal experience in college? And hey, after you prove yourself after a year or two, hey, just sit out and start training for the league. There might be guys, because agents are trying to prey on that situation. There may be guys that decided to do that. I just have always looked at it. David talked about how much I love college football. What I love about it is the experience of David Pollack and what he had when he was at Georgia. After 2 years or 3 years, David Pollack, you know, very easily could have looked at the NFL as an option. But there's just still something about, if your goal is strictly a business, if it's just about NFL, if it's just through that lens of me and my family and taking care of my family, if that's the only lens you're looking through, then you'll never understand what that college experience is about, as far as hanging out with your boys in your apartment, playing video games, you know, going to class, going to games with each other, messing around on the bus, just guys being guys, right? That's the thing, the camaraderie that everybody misses. If you're not really into that, then maybe you'll start to see some guys that will start to look at it as, hey, I've already proven myself. I'm a first rounder. I'm going to go to Phoenix and I'm going to work out my third year instead of playing. I know in talking to coaches, they like to see players compete. You know, they like to see players continue to develop. So I'm not going to sit here and say, hey, these guys are making a huge mistake, because from a business standpoint, guys like Micah Parsons and Ja'Marr Chase, you're right. It doesn't matter whether you play that third year or you don't. So if it's, again, if that's all they're looking at, then I say, step out, go get yourself, stay healthy and go play. But I just think there's such a very, very different perspective that hopefully the large majority of guys look at, as far as, you know, growing up and bettering yourself in so many ways besides just strictly making it to the NFL in a one track path.
And what people don't realize, by the way, is that's such a small minority. Like, we start talking about paying athletes and we start talking about guys sitting out. You're talking about, this is 0.0001% of guys. Like, it's not the normal. It's not the normal. It's the exceptional that, yes, there are different cases like that and this should be treated differently. But listen, I'm a guy, I can speak to this, because I was projected to be a first round pick my junior year. I could have came out. I could have went to the NFL. I don't make many decisions in my life I don't look back on and say, man, I'm just so glad I made that. I'm so glad I made that. Did I win a national championship? No. but I got to come back and do something with my buddies.
You got to try to chase it.
I got to chase it. And I got another year of being a kid and having a profound experience that continued to shape the rest of my life that I'll never forget. And I wouldn't trade it for $7 million. I wouldn't trade it for a 10-year NFL career. I wouldn't do it. And so I think, you know, we get lost in that 0.001% a lot of times. Yeah. We don't look at the rest of the people that are fighting for something else, that are fighting for their teammates, are fighting for experience, that they know that next step isn't possible. It's probably not going to happen, but my God, I'm going to maximize this because I'm wearing that Buckeye on my helmet and it means something to me.
Yeah. And I think just competing, right? I don't care if I'm in middle school, there's just something about competing that is enjoyable, you know, not to mention if you're playing at Georgia or Ohio State or Texas or Florida State, and you're playing in a high profile school that's on national TV every day, not to mention that opportunity that you would get. And I've never bumped into, in 25 years of doing this, I've never bumped into an NFL guy. We see them all the time come back to their college games to be able to watch their school. And they're on the sidelines or they're around the campus. And they're like, oh, my God, do I miss this? Oh, what I would give to come back and play one more time, come out of that tunnel right there. Like, it's just different. It's a business. It's different than the college experience with the fans that are at that stadium. You walk through a tunnel with, I don't know, 40,000 people that line a tunnel up for the Tigers to come through. It's just, there's more to it. But if you're strictly looking at it through, I got to go get my money, then you'll probably never look at that. It's just maybe not something that registers, or maybe, you know, something that's that much value to you. But I think to the larger percentage of guys, it still is.
For some perspective too on the conversation we're having about Ja'Marr Chase and the offense and what they lost, LSU has a quarterback, Miles Brennan, who hasn't started a game. He's thrown 70 passes in his career. And I provide that information just because he's coming back and he's looking around, and LSU will not get the opportunity like many of these schools in the past, where they come back and they can celebrate with a full capacity crowd that we are national champs and we are back home, right? At their first game in Death Valley. What do you think, considering the pandemic, the delay of this season, the social justice or injustice that we've seen over the last 3 to 4 months, and athletes, speaking out on the college level, understanding their voice? What do you anticipate this season's going to be like? Let's just say the first couple of weeks, especially not having a crowd at full capacity, the college experience of not having the tailgate that we're going to see in many places that we're used to. What do you think that's going to be like affecting play on the field?
Yeah, I think it could affect performance on the field. I think more of the latter. When you talk about going between the hedges or going into the shoe or going into Death Valley or any of these places that typically have a huge home field advantage, and now you're talking in some cases, I don't know, 20% max, and some other cases not even that. You're obviously going to see. I can't wait to see the offense huddles up. It's almost like a spring game. Like, you can hear the quarterback talking to the offense, or at the line of scrimmage, you can hear things. It's so much easier. You can hear coaches yelling from the sideline. You know, you don't even think really much about that, but before it was all about hand signals and, you know, signs holding things up and, you know, because of the crowd or whatever it might be. David, I can't wait to see how defenses play when they can hear every single word that's being barked. Yeah. And if you're on the sideline of a spring game, you know there's a huge difference in a spring game energy versus, you know, what you get when there's 100,000 people watching the game. So I think it'll definitely impact the game. And it's hard to predict how. It might vary from one week to the other, but make no mistake, it's not going to be your average college football season without those crowds in the stadium.
It's weird, Kevin. He says the shoe in Sanford Stadium. He didn't say anything about Lincoln. Anyways,
I can already tell you, the 6,000 to 8,000 to 10,000 that we're going to normally have, we will not have that because of the state of Pennsylvania will not allow it. But we packed the place when Penn State and Notre Dame showed up. So you take it easy over there, Pollock.
Yeah, I was just saying he didn't mention your home stadium, how difficult it can be. Anyways, when I think about this season too, not only what Kirk's talking about with communication and stuff, I also think about, I'll put it to you like this. My gym, I built a big weight room and a basketball gym outside of my house. And I had a lot of people that came through this and during this pandemic because they didn't have a lot of options to work out. There wasn't facilities that were open. Mine were. So I can just tell you from being around some of those football players that they were in bad shape, bro. I'm talking about months and months away from the game, months back at home, eating like crap, you know, not moving like normal. By the way, don't have spring ball, don't have the other stuff that goes with it now. So you think about from a standpoint of offenses, I can see offenses being more behind where they're usually at because I can tell you, right, and Kirk can tell you this, every scrimmage you do, the defense wins every first scrimmage. It's just the way it is. Yeah. The defense is not about timing and rhythm. That's why I could play. It's C-ball. I mean, you just go and you play 9,000 miles an hour. So I think offenses and the offensive juggernaut stuff we've had over the last several years, I think that's something that could be slowed. But I'm very interested for communication part. And I just hope we take advantage of that too. I hope we mic everybody up and we listen to calls and we listen to checks and all that stuff. Might as well during this time when the fans won't be there.
It reminds me a lot, Kevin, of like Major League Baseball, whether it's spring training or the early part of April, where the pitchers are maybe a step or two ahead of the batter. And eventually the hitters settle in and kind of start to find their groove, catch up to those 97, 98 mile an hour fastballs or a cutter. You know, it's at 92, you know, in April, they're like, what in the world is that? And by May and June, they're kind of going. It's same thing with football. You're right, David. The timing of it, it's really on these players during the quarantine. David talked about his experience in Athens, but what quarterbacks, typically the most important position, are saying, hey, fellas, 4 o'clock over in this field, we're going to try to throw. Were they allowed to? You know, in some places, they weren't even allowed to do that. But at some point, they got green lighted and they were. How many guys responded to that, even though coaches weren't allowed to be out there? And a lot of it was an unknown. Were there guys like Trevor Lawrence? Were there guys like Justin Fields, veteran guys that Sam Ehlinger that knew, hey, you know, I got to get all my guys together. We're missing out on stuff we would normally be doing right now, and we got to catch up. So I think you'll be able to see early in the teams that are playing and executing that they have the benefit of having a quarterback that's got some experience behind him and has been able to kind of do some stuff when everything's gone dark. They were still able to throw and still able to do work. That'll be very evident in the first couple of weeks of the season.
It's something to keep an eye on. I go back to, you know, Trevor Lawrence already knowing the system. So, you know, you slide right in. Travis Etienne in the backfield, that helps immensely. Ian Book over at Notre Dame, Kyle Trask at Florida. They already know what's going on. You could slide in. And I go back to how I watch the NBA now in the inside a bubble where you don't have a crowd affecting the momentum, right? Especially on runs with defense. And you don't feel like there's an environment that there's pressure for the offense to come down the floor. So to me, it's fascinating to see how the momentum will play a role here when you watch football. And you guys could speak firsthand. I can't on if that's going to play a role with not hearing a crowd, right?
Tell me what the latest is, guys, with the crowds. Is it different for the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC as far as – I know they're going to put some crowd noise into the stadium. Is it just going to be kind of like what we've seen in these other sports? Is it going to be an audio guy and he's just going to kind of just have background crowd? Or is it going to, like, if it's a touchdown or a sack or a pick six and it's the home team, is the crowd going to go crazy? Like, have you guys heard anything about these stadiums and what the crowd noise will be?
That's a great question.
Do that?
I have not heard that in college football. Like, I know that the NFL was being discussed in college football, each state, you know, how many people can show up comes with the regulations, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be different because I don't think every stadium is going to be the same. So I think it's good. It's definitely going to be a different vibe and like some people aren't going to allow any people to stand. Some people are going to allow 20%, but it's definitely going to vary from atmosphere to atmosphere. But here's one thing too. And Kirk can, I mean, when you are a player, like, there is nothing you can do when that crowd starts to go crazy. Some people just melt, bro. I mean, they're not ready. They can't handle it. You know, it's loud. You can't communicate. Like, I'm not going to name names, but I'll never forget this, bro. I had a guy on my team my sophomore year. This is Boss Bailey. Every time I line up, he's calling out the formation. He's calling out the tendency. Hey, alert this, alert that. Next year, I got another guy that I played with, a new guy. And in practice, bro, two open stud, 90% rollout. Hey, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I'm talking about, bro, you brought those fans in there? I was like, is he alive? Is that guy, is he behind me? I mean, I can't hear a thing. A lot of times, remember, defense is about communication. When you're the home team, you can't communicate real well. It's hard to communicate your thoughts. You know what else you can't hear? You can't hear your coaches, by the way, who knows every thought. And guess what you'll be able to hear now, probably? You'll probably be able to have Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, all these great defensive minds going, hey.
Yelling stuff.
We got bunch, alert list, alert X, alert Y. You're going to be like, oh, man, that's great. Yeah. Like, I think the communication part and that stuff. So, listen, having Arnold Harrison behind me, whoops, didn't want to mention his name. Having Arnold Harrison behind me is a lot different than having a guy like Boss Bailey. So, the communication, I think, is going to be a huge issue.
Yeah. I go back to, and we should ask Greg Sankey this, but I wonder, I mean, if you go to a place like Georgia or Alabama, they have the latest technology. I mean, you go to some of these practices, and they'll just in August, and they're doing a scrimmage to get ready for a game. And they have an ability to put the crowd up, and the players cannot hear themselves talking on the field. Like there's not a fan in the stands. There's no one there. And the audio systems that they have an ability to crank the crowd up. And I'm telling you, if you're in the huddle, the quarterback's trying to tell you the play, you might have a hard time hearing him. It's that loud. So I don't know if that's going to be welcomed. I don't know if that's legal. It's illegal. That's something we need to figure out. It, like David said, is that a school by school thing? Are there some restrictions? Is it, hey, do whatever you want to do? That's going to be an interesting part.
There'll be restrictions, but who's going to cheat is going to be the question.
Yeah. And honestly, it's clearly a conference-to-conference thing. I mean, Dan Mullen recently said, that I think it was like just a few days ago, he's asking around and he needs to find out if the stadium's full, we don't need to pipe in crowd noise. If the stadium's not going to be full, what's our rule going to be? It's right. A question for the league office. And that's something to play out. Because I
think people would be shocked how loud that these stadiums can make the stadium be without fans in it. I mean, you'd be at home thinking it's, you know, a national championship game because of how loud the crowd can get.
And to that, we've seen a little bit of that in baseball. And I know, Herbie, you were watching your Reds and I've been watching the Phillies. And I've noticed that they're doing everything they can to create an ambiance with the crowd. And I specifically listen on a hit. Can you hear something aside from the air from Phillies fans? They pump up a little bit of that noise for the broadcast, but I'm curious to see how the players are affected by that. Do they hear anything?
Two things. Number one, I'm convinced the Reds are just a jinx franchise. It's just doesn't matter who's on the roster. Makes no sense. They are just 7 straight years of mediocrity. Just write them off. They're done. They can't score. I mean, other than if you're supposed to score runs, I don't know if that's still part of the game, but for some reason, they've not decided that they want to do that this year. But even with the lineup that they have, there'll be no scoring of any runs of any kind when it comes to the Cincinnati Redlegs. You know, scratch that. And then the Phillies last night, Che and I were like watching. It was like 10-0 in the second inning. And then I come back and it's 10-8 or something like that. I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, They had a ball game last
night.
They
came charm up a little bit short. Then that's the charm of watching it with an 8-year-old and 6-year-old, because when it was 10, they were down 10-1. My boys were like, don't change it, Daddy. Don't change it. And I was like, come on, guys. And the next thing you know, we're watching the third inning and they put up 6 and they're like, hey, we're back in the game. It's 10-7. And I'm like, my kids, man, they have this eternal hope, but they have no idea that the bullpen is going to let us down each and every time.
By the way, it's 12-10, and then bottom of the ninth, you get a runner on. I'm thinking, oh, they got the tying runs. And Dan, how about Dansby Swanson's double play when he went into the hole? Oh. I mean, he is so gifted.
Is this a baseball podcast?
Oh,
still watch baseball?
It's okay to like something else. It's okay to be a little diverse.
Y'all could not pay me to watch a baseball game. There is not an amount of money. I mean, listen, there's not an amount of money you could put on this table right now to make me sit down and watch a baseball game. And you guys are all in. Good Lord. I hear you.
Hey, we have diversity in our portfolio, Pollock. Come on. Add some diversity.
Yeah, I mean, I'll add high school football, college football, pro football. I'm good with that. I like the NBA. I love the NBA. I know Kirk ain't an NBA fan. I love watching the NBA.
I've not seen a whole lot of that. I'm waiting until we make a run in the play. But I'm never an NBA guy until we get to like the Eastern Conference Finals, Western Conference Finals. Then I'll tune in at that point.
Well, I can tell you the NBA has been fantastic inside the bubble, and Herbie, you're going to love it when we get tighter with these playoffs, when they shrink down and we have the semifinals in the Eastern and Western Conference. And it was good.
Where are we right now? Where are we? What round are we in?
We are in the second round. Yeah, we're in the second round. Okay. And, you know, we're just, you know, cleaning things up on the Western Conference. In the Eastern Conference, the Raptors and Celtics just got on board. The great series to watch. If you guys really want to watch a really good, like a ton of offense and two superstars that understand what life is like inside the bubble and they're blowing up, is the Nuggets Jazz series. Jamal Murray has been fantastic. He dropped 50 last night to force a game 7 against Donovan Mitchell, who's been fantastic with his 50-point game. So there's a game 7 coming up, Nuggets, Jazz. It's worth watching. It's just two guys that know their offensive scoring ability, and they light it up. So trust me.
No, Chuck's going to be watching baseball. Sorry. He's going to be that high energy, high intensity baseball game that's going on.
Oh, you're beautiful.
Well, listen, it's great to come out strong here on the podcast on Monday. And we want to make sure our audience knows that next week we'll start to kind of start looking at, you know, the conferences and start breaking down some stuff. But we wanted to get the first one out together, kind of sum up the things that we've seen over the summer and our first, impressions of what it's going to be like heading into football this week. You got 4 games on Thursday. I can't wait. We even got a Monday night game next week with our fingers crossed. So, guys, it's been great. I hope the family's safe and healthy. Appreciate you guys joining us. Big thanks to Herb Street and Pollock. We've got to expand Pollock as the season continues, his taste in sports, and nothing with the word foot involved. He's got to watch something else. I know he mentioned the NBA, but he's legitimately has to watch something else as well. It's just expanding him and making him a better person. Again, as I mentioned before at the start of the podcast, in the coming weeks on Mondays and Tuesdays, we'll have Herbie and Pollock together. And then later in the week, we'll have Pollock come back and preview some of the games on the upcoming schedule. And hopefully later on this week, we'll have a couple of other different voices and guests as we try to bring in our reporters throughout the country with their perspective on what's going on. Very fluid few weeks in front of us, or you could say a few months in front of us, as we try to see this season, an unprecedented season, continue. A big thanks to Taylor Schwenk, as always, on the other side coordinating. Until then, if you want football, stay safe, stay healthy, wear a mask.